This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Thank you for inviting me. You've got such wonderful coverage across the country for me to be able to speak to you. And at the end of this, if there's any contacts in your particular state that you might want around engagement teams, I can provide them to you. So before we kick off, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on where we all meet today and where you find yourself this evening. Pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging leaders we might have with us today. I heard earlier that we've only got one person in the group who isn't an NDIA participant. So I'll continue with starting at the planning stage. So many of you may have had a planning episode with the agency and have your plan in place. The agency's recently released a new price guide as well that hasn't made any changes to dog guide pricing. It has made changes to remote and very remote pricing that is additional for travel for therapists. So that might relate to some of you depending on your location. Aside from dog guides, the agency has a new CEO. Everyone may have seen that. And he and the minister have made some announcements about how the agency changes our approach to planning and how we make support in plans more flexible for people. So if we're thinking about planning and how you come to the agency to request a dog guide, there's three ways in which someone would present to us meeting
oh,
a dog
sorry,
guide.
Oh, sorry, Amber.
Yeah.
Amber, sorry, yeah. I'll just ask, can everybody, just for this part of the session, could you please press star six and mute your phone because there's a lot of background noise? And then you can unmute by pressing star six after when the questions come on. Thanks.
So, as I was saying, there's probably three ways in which the agency is going to look at someone that wants a dog guide. So three situations you might find yourself in. You might be a person that hasn't had a dog before. You might be someone who has previously had a dog and hasn't had one in a while and is considering that you may need that for your support. Or you're someone who is retiring a dog and needs another dog to support you. So you're having a planning conversation. What we're looking at talking to you about through that planning conversation is what other mobility aids and equipment or alternatives of aids and of equipment have you trialled, have you utilised, do we have reports on, and looking at is that a lower cost than the value of a guide dog? I'm sure you're all aware of a guide dog is... let me use equipment, so apologies to people as dog lovers. But we're looking at the dog as an expensive piece of equipment and what are all those other things that fit within our legislative guidelines around reasonable and necessary and value for money. So it doesn't say, it's not saying we don't consider the dog. We really consider what is that orientation and mobility training that's been undertaken. What are your informal supports? If you have a range of people that are helping you access the community independently, you might not have a need for a dog. So we consider those things. We also consider as well what other pieces of equipment that you might need to utilise if you have a dog. So combining all of those items of assistive technology. So we're going to look at, just recapping that, what your current level of mobility is, what mobility aids you're using, what are the travel routes that you're using as well, and can you perform those with or without a dog? We'd look at as well what your suitability would be to be a dog guide user. So some people might have medical things happening that might affect their suitability of being able to manage and handle a dog. So we would look at those too and discover what they are from you and from a mobility instructor that may have worked with you in the past. I mentioned the informal support as well. So you've come to us. We've looked at all those things, whether it's a replacement dog, whether it's reutilisation of a dog, whether it's a new dog. And then we would ask for a guide dog mobility instructor to assess your suitability and then provide us with the assessments and the reports in relation to their findings. So they're the accredited specialists that you would all be aware of. And we would use their assessments and their reporting to the agency. So we're funding them and relying on their expertise to be able to give us additional information to support the funding of a dog. There's probably some complexities in there as well. So most requests are probably a standard request. There may be some complexities in a request, which at that stage, if you're meeting with a planner and there's some complex requirements, we would ask for further technical advice from our technical advice team, but that's not a standard procedure that you would see in relation to a dog guide. We would expect that within that planning conversation, one of your main goals is going to be to independently access the community, because ultimately that's why we're funding the dog for you. Let me jump to retiring a dog. So if you're retiring a dog due to injury or illness, we would consider that a reasonable necessary support in the interim before you receive another dog. We would add additional supports in your plan to support you with accessing the community as well. So that would require a plan review. It's probably 12 months before a replacement dog. So that's the wait time. It'd be 12 months for a dog. So you need to keep that in mind when you're working with your dog and it's coming up to its working life. So 7 to 8 years, maybe a little bit longer. So when the dog is 5 to 6 years old and you're having a planning meeting with the agency, that's when we start looking at considering whether it's a replacement dog and still doing all those assessments around is there equipment that is lower cost for you to utilise and what that looks like. So if you're involved with the NDIS and you've been through a few plan review cycles, I'd be interested, actually, if we could open it up to questions at the minute. I'd be interested to know what your experiences are and whether any of you have needed to have a replacement dog or a new dog through the agency.
Okay. Anyone experiencing that?
Yeah, it's Leanne.
Thanks, Leanne.
My dog is at 8 at the moment. She's my first dog. And when I was paired with her, my instructor at the time was barely in the state because she was travelling state to state. I did my 4-week training at home with her, and because my instructor was barely available for me to be able to call on when I needed her, I was not put back on the list. And I've had to go to a lawyer and get some things done to help me with this and get a reassessment done, which has been done. I still have no answer to that. But it's hard when you have one instructor in a state that is barely in the state to be able to help you with your first dog. So they said no because I was handbagging her because my positioning wasn't right. But I never had the fallback of an instructor to teach me. And she is now looking at the time, and they have just said to me, no, I can't use a cane for long distance because I have got screws and pins in my shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. So let's touch on instructors and the supports that we put in a plan, because I was asked the question around, Kevin asked me the question around the flexibility within the plan to be able to spend those funds for a different instructor. So there's a range of ways that the funding for a dog is put into a plan. So does everyone have an understanding of the core capital and capacity building budget in NDIS plans? Awesome. So the funding of a dog guide spans all three of those budgets. So we're looking at the funding for the maintenance costs in the core budget. It's a really good idea, if you're able to, that you self-manage that budget. So there's a range of ways you can manage the funding, but that's the easiest way for you to be able to take control of those maintenance costs, your food costs, your veterinary costs, those particular things. So the cost of the dog is going to be a quote. So we would get that assessor to give us a quote, and that would be put in the capital support. So something that's quoted with the agency, that the price of that can't change. And then we're looking at that ongoing training. So 60, 70 hours in total. So we'll be looking at, in the first month, the third month, the 6 month, I think the 12th month, and then additional hours. So I would be looking at what hours that you have and then working with whoever's your contact in the plan to try to source a trainer that you can utilise those funds to spend.
Well, the trainer that we currently have now, she is much more accessible but still hard to get hold of. But when we did my assessment with her, and it went back to CEDA to see whether or not they were going to give me another dog, the answer was no, because of a few different things. And they thought that I could use a cane. And, look, if I could get away with a cane, look, I'd love to. As much as I love my dog, I'd love to be able to get away with a cane, fold it up, put it in my bag and off I go. But it's not practical for me.
Yeah, yeah. So have you got back on the list for...
I don't know.
...for a dog now?
I don't know.
Yeah, so what I would suggest was, if you've got a local area coordinator that's attached to your plan, so someone that's helped develop that plan with you, start talking to them now about, just highlight that this plan is probably going to need a review at some time.
Yeah, we're just starting that, and I've got a functional capacity assessment in the works.
Yes. Really talk through with that local area coordinator, really talk through with them how you're going to manage those budgets. So once you've got those budgets, you're looking at signing a service agreement with a provider. So because the therapy hours, so essentially the training and the ongoing touch in with the therapist fits in a therapy budget in the plan, you're going to sign a service agreement, but you might choose to sign a service agreement that says, I want all my hours with you, or I want some hours with someone else, or we might sign this for 3 months. And think about how you're going to manage that, because if you can manage that budget yourself and self-manage it.
Yeah, I am self-managing.
Yeah, so you've got that absolute brilliant flexibility. If it's agency managed, that's where I'd be saying to people, what's in your service agreement and how do you think you might need to utilise this budget? And it gives you that option to look for another provider. So understanding that you might live in an area where providers aren't plentiful. Some of us all live in areas where there may not be those providers. But so I think your best bet is how you're managing that budget, seeing if you can utilise another provider as well, and really getting your local area coordinator to start talking through that work to get that result for you.
Leanne, is that helpful?
Is that helpful?
Yes, yeah, it is, in the sense of my new plan, because we're looking at including the new dog that we do or do not know of yet, which I have or have not been told of yet. But, it's just the whole fact of I've had no transparency through the whole process.
And so, Leanne, is that transparency from the agency or transparency from your provider?
Both.
Yeah. So, look, I would absolutely say you should be pushing us on transparency, because we should, if we can't answer your question, we should be going somewhere to find the answer to that and providing that to you, you know, in the most appropriate way that you can receive.
This is why I had to get the lawyer involved, you know, because every time I ask the question, nobody's answered me on it.
Yeah, look, I'm happy if Kevin passes on my email address to you, and we can, if you come up against anything, just let me know and we can see if we can't look at how to navigate this a bit differently for you.
That would be amazing. Thank you.
We could do that. I also want to touch on part of the funding as well around accommodation. So we cover accommodation costs within the plan. So that's accommodation for you if you need to spend time away from home during that matching period and the first the first part of training. So accommodation costs for yourself at the training centre, and that's likely to meet our reasonable and necessary criteria. And it's because of that matching training that you need to do, and sometimes you need to go back to do that training to find a suitable dog. The accommodation costs also can cover the cost of the dog guide trainer to provide them with accommodation when they need to be away from home as well. So we have a whole practice guidance on this. So for you all and Leanne as well, I would be speaking to your LAC in this situation to say, there is a practice guidance around how these supports get put in a plan. That should be their go-to information to be able to start to put that in the plan for you and explain that process to you.
And who do I go to for the lack of transparency that I've had?
Say that again, sorry.
Who do I go to for the lack of transparency?
Yeah, so I would start with, if it's with the agency and the issue is with the local area coordinator, I would start with their organisation, so whoever the partner organisation is, and they should be able to support you through a complaints process. You can also email, I think it's complaints at the NDIA, but when you get a hold of my email, I can provide you with some of those details, because absolutely, those things it shouldn't be a hard thing to navigate through.
No, it shouldn't. And I was never told why I failed my first assessment.
So in terms of assessment, think about the person doing the assessment. If we're funding them, they're a provider. So anything in that sense has to be taken up with the provider. So we should be telling you that. We should be saying, hey, there's a situation here and this assessment...
Yeah, no, I don't get any of that.
Yeah, well, that's what should happen. In best practice world, that's absolutely what should happen. And then what we should be doing is, if you then say, well, I want a copy of the assessment, we would say go to the provider and ask them. And they should be providing that detail for you to look at. And, if the information is... Think about if the information is FOIable... We should be delivering that information and messaging to you. So,
brilliant. Thanks so much for your help, Amber.
So let's recap in terms of what would be in your plan. We're looking at funding in a range of budgets once we've received the quote for the dog. Part of that quote will be equipment, so your consumables, for maintenance costs of the dog will sit in one area of your planner's funding. The cost of the dog will sit in another area. The cost of the ongoing assessment and training will sit in another area. And there's the accommodation component as well. Also sitting in within that assistive technology budget for the dog will be things like its harnesses and the equipment that the dog needs also.
Yep.
12-month wait for a dog if it's a replacement dog. I mentioned about additional support to put in your plan for community access. If you're looking at a dog and having over 5 hours a week of one-to-one support for community access, we would need to seek further technical advice around that too, because, like I mentioned at the start, the expectation is the dog is the piece of assistive technology that allows you to access the community. So we'd be saying, you know, what is it about your situation that you're looking at a dog and that level of assistance?
So can you repeat that, please, Amber? 5 hours per week of one-on-one support.
Yeah,
I agree.
Really? What?
And, I'm
sorry.
That's ridiculous.
It is
yeah,
way
so,
too low.
Yeah, so and
a dog gets me to a place, it can't help me access the activities exactly. that I do while yeah. I'm there. That's yeah. a completely different thing. Like that sorry, that's just yeah. that's not reasonable nor necessary.
So, we are the navigators,
they
are the drivers.
Yeah, so that 5 hour benchmark is so if you've got, so let me take a step back and do a bit of clarifying there if I haven't got that across properly. So we're looking at the dog and we're looking at you've got 10 hours of support in your plan of, let's say it's one to one access. Our delegates would need to seek technical advice and ask you some more questions around the need for that level of assistance. So it's not to say there's no dog or there's no community access. It's about having that planning conversation to really establish and support that delegate to make a reasonable and necessary decision.
Yeah, and some I just of you say have that your benchmark's you said, a little bit off there like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's not even, that shouldn't even be the beginning point.
Mm. Yeah,
sorry,
One at a time, please.
Amber, it's Roz yes. here. Say with this 5 hours, I want to go to a supermarket and do my shopping. The dog can get me to the supermarket and he or she can find the carrot. But for the rest of it, I need yeah. someone to help me. And then I go yep. bushwalking once a week with my dog and I'm in a rural area. So we might take half an hour to get out to the point where I can go bushwalking with my dog. There's an hour each way, once a week, just straight off.
Yeah.
And so you add up a few things like that, I'd easily come up to 5 hours or more, even though I have a dog.
Yeah, absolutely. And so exactly how you've expressed that there is how you would be having that conversation in a planning meeting, and mm-hmm. the LAC or the planner would say, oh, there's over 5 hours here. I need to basically justify this in relation to some technical advice to say, yep, that looks good to go in the plan and that meets reasonable and necessary. So it's about those checks and balances. It's not saying the benchmark is, so I'm not saying the benchmark is 5 hours and no more or no less.
Mm-hmm.
It's that individualised planning conversation where you say, hey, my goal is to independently access the community, but like you said, the dog gets me to the supermarket, but I need extra support while I'm there. So at the planning conversation would say, what does that look like? What, you know, what support do you need and how do we work that with you in your plan? You'd have a goal around not only accessing the community, it might be as specific as bushwalking. So the great thing about that is there's additional support that we know about we need to mm-hmm. seek additional advice on and then consider putting in new plan. So it's not, so don't see that as an issue. Just see mm-hmm. see it as knowledge for yourself that our staff are going to ask mm-hmm. some additional questions around what does that look like for you? Explain that to me more, because the way you've explained it, as if I was a delegate, I'd be saying, I know I need to fill in that form in terms of justification, and yep, that looks good because, you know, you walk regularly. So don't take it, so please don't take it as 5 hours is it. It's that trigger for a delegate to then do some further investigation in why we're looking at that additional support as well as the dog.
Okay, good. So, Amber, anything else you want to cover before we open up for questions?
Yeah, I don't think so, unless people have some specific queries. I'm happy to open up for questions. I know I've covered off funding quite quickly and where that fits, but if people have animals and have those particular supports in a plan, you would be very well versed in how that plan's put together.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, well, we might do that. We'll open it up for questions. Now, I'm on an hour limit on this phone, but what I'll do if I drop out, Penny, you're there. If I drop out, you just jump in whenever you need to. I'll dial straight back in.
I've got this very cheap mobile plan.
Yeah. Thank you. So, okay, it's open to everybody for questions. So just one at a time.
This is Steve.
Steve, thank you.
Yeah. Hi, Amber. How are you going?
Hi, Steve.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm just about to retire an old working dog. He's been a great dog. I've had him he's 11 and a half years old. So, and I'm going, I've been accepted for a new dog. I've just done the paperwork through the NDIS to hopefully be accepted in that part. And it just seems to be such a rigmarole of getting around and trying to justify everything why I need the dog. You know, I can't see, and I need this dog. I've had a couple of dogs over several years, over 25 years, and the thing I think find a bit sad too. Like our working dogs have had a great career. Now there's funding for the dog, which is fantastic. So when this old dog retires, there's nothing to support the old dog when he retires either. They just have to put out the pasture.
Yeah. So I, Kevin did ask me to come to you with the answers to, I'm just looking for the question, a question around ownership of the dog. And in discussing that with our provider team just today, it did come up around retiring the dog and then the responsibility of retiring the dog. So I don't have an answer to that question right now, because what's happened is I popped around the office, then I looked at all our documentation and said to everyone, who owns this dog? And I've had to seek further advice from our provider and markets team. The reason I sought that advice from them is to come back to you with a proper answer rather than I was getting different answers. They were all heading in the same direction, but they weren't 100%. So in terms of dog ownership, I will come back to Kevin with an answer on that. But then that raised the question of retirement and support for a dog. So I've raised that today with our provider team as well.
So we might get some answers on that, because I've had my best mate for, like I said, 11 and a half years old, and why I'm going to get a new dog, something should happen with the old dog to be supported too.
Yeah, so what happens before the NDIS when you retire the dog?
Well, in the past, we always just looked after them the best we could, or they go out to a new family or something like that too. But I think being on the NDIS and being on pensions and what have you, we had that opportunity where we could have support to look after our old dog and continue on with our new dog, and keep that dog in the family too. That would be something pretty special.
Yeah. And look, and part of my conversation today with our provider team was, I have a dog that I want to retire, and you tell me I own that dog, and I choose to take it to the pound because that's what I want to do. And, people... all people do that with dogs at some point. Well, not everyone does that, but people in our community take their dogs to pounds. And the provider team said, well, hang on, aren't we getting a bit ahead of ourselves? And I said, well, absolutely not, because if we're talking about the ownership of an animal and who owns it, and then who's responsible for support and care for that animal after its working life, we don't have a really good answer for that. So give me a few weeks on it, and I say a few weeks, not because... not for any reason, except I want to come back to you with a really good answer from our technical advice team around what their view is of that, and ensure that is the view of the agency, especially around national consistency, because all the documentation I can find doesn't even speak to the retirement, the animal once it's retired. So I apologise that I can't answer that, but I've started some work a couple of days ago on getting those answers.
Well, I just really hope that there's someone on the panel there who actually gets out and ticks these things off, that, you know, has a heart where, you know, to understand that these dogs are a huge part of our lives. And they need support after they're working.
In regards to that, my name's Penny, and I happen to be involved in the specialist disability space, specialist disability accommodation space. Yes. And in the SDA rules, there's a rule that if somebody's lived in specialist disability accommodation for a time, it's a recognition that, you know, that they have potentially lost skills and are not able to easily fit back into the mainstream housing environment. I'm wondering whether the same sorts of rules could be applied in the dog guard world. You know, many of us, once we've used a dog, are used to that form of mobility. And, you know, I wonder whether there could be a rule put in to the NDIS to take account of, you know, that it shouldn't be so hard to get subsequent dogs. You know, once you've been approved for a dog, it should just be an easy thing to follow, that we shouldn't have to make so many arguments, perhaps. And this is where I'm going.
Yeah, and the conversation I had with our provider team was, you know, the thought was, the dog's a piece of equipment. What would happen if someone had a wheelchair? And that's where I said, wait, let's not start getting into animal welfare issues. And our rule with a wheelchair, and the reason I say that is our rule with a wheelchair, from what you just said, Penny, is, you know, we can look at just a small reassessment and look at this almost like for like, and funding after it's utilised its 8-year time period for a piece of equipment. So you're absolutely right. If we want to say that dog guide is a piece of assistive technology within, you know, under the heading of assistive technology within the NDIS, it should absolutely not be as tricky as it looks like, because you would have had all those check-ins and all those training assessments over the lifetime of the dog with that orientation and mobility training. So I will take that back and I will raise that. But that's a really good point, like why those rules can't be applied to.
That's exactly where I am, Amber, with my situation. You know, like I had my first guide dog, as Penny said. Why is it now being so hard?
Yeah, look,
now that I'm retiring her.
Yeah, it comes down to the delegate being bound by the legislation and having to follow that process through to make that decision. So they're bound by that legislation in their decision making.
Amber, it's Jamie here. Can I just add to this? I was in a situation where my dog had to retire suddenly just before my plan was up. I didn't have time to get a reassessment, AT assessment for a new dog. So consequently, with my new plan, I didn't get the dog in the new plan. I was told that I'll have to do a, you know, a light touch review within 3 months to get the dog in the next plan. And the problem is, of course, that with both schools, the CETA and also GDV in Melbourne, there's like a 12-2-year waiting list anyway. So, and then you're stuck on a one-year plan. So I was hoping to get the dog on my plan for the like, but I couldn't. So even though I just had one that had retired, so it does seem to me like there's a bit of hardness and unnecessary sort of, yeah, inflexibility there around all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good, Jamie.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing you say is that, and I did used to, I was once a planner within the agency, is that we need to, and correct me if I'm wrong, everyone, that as a planner or a local area coordinator, we need to do that better predicting into the future for you as we talk to you year on year. So it's not, like, rather than the blinkers of 12 months, we've got 12 months, but your dog's 6 years old. So what do we need to think about doing over the next period of time? Is that, that's what you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but also just that, you know, like if you've already had a dog or got a dog or your dog's just retired, surely you've had one. Why do you have to go through a massive process to get assessed?
Yeah, yeah.
To get the money on your plan, given the situation. I mean, it just seems a little bit. And also, you know, you get 3 months to do a review. But again, there's the other issues, as I said, that. And I know Cedar, I'm told there's a 2 year waiting list. So even if you do get the dog on your plan, it needs to roll over for another year.
Amber, it's Penny again. Is there a way of having, like, quote required continually in your plan in case your piece of assistive technology fails?
So. No, I would say no, because if we're looking at a fixed piece of assistive technology, there would be a repair budget in there. And that's where that's tricky, because we can't really put a repair budget in for,
could we have a replacement budget instead of a repair budget?
Yeah, look, it's a tricky one.
Could it be changed?
I don't.
But then the quotes are only good for 12 months too, so that's a flaw in it. But maybe that's a possibility we could look at. NDIA could look at, the schools could look at.
Yeah, absolutely, for me to raise. And I personally don't like saying, hey, we've got some assistive technology that needs repair, because that's okay when you equate it to a wheelchair. It doesn't sit well sometimes when you're equating it to a dog. So there needs to be, which I can follow up on for you all, there needs to be, as you're rightly saying, some consideration from the agency around it's not just a piece of equipment.
Yeah, expedited replacement.
But in some ways, it is a piece of equipment. And sorry,
absolutely,
that sounds harsh, but it is.
Yeah,
and so if we could look at repair/replacement, then we'd have something in there. And it's from a user's point of view, it's really, really scary when we think, well, we mightn't get another dog. That's scary. It really stresses people.
Yeah.
I've been terrified, Penny, and that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so has anyone had the experience that, or they know someone that hasn't had a replacement dog approved?
Yeah, me.
By the
I didn't get put on the list.
Yeah.
I've had to fight my butt off to get a reassessment. I had to get a lawyer involved to get a reassessment.
So it's Kathy. Kathy speaking, Amber. I actually had a dog that I had a couple of days' notice and it had to be retired. Its work wasn't up to standard and it was immediately withdrawn. I actually ended up with 14 months waiting for a new dog, but I was then suggested, when this happened, it was told to me to do a review, and we looked at the time frame of a review and the time frame of my plan, and it would have taken longer to get a review. So when I went back to the provider, I said, well, really, this dog was only 2 years. I had it. Can I have a replacement? And the answer was no. I had to apply as a new dog.
Mm, yeah.
Completely.
Yeah,
look, I had to go and I had to get I had to get all my medical staff, everybody, to absolutely lobby very, very hard for me and write reports. And I absolutely bombarded NDIS with it, including a functional capacity assessment to do that. And so, I believe that that's really the final crunch. And it came down to my safety because I also have hearing issues.
Yes.
And because I was classified, reclassified as deaf blind, I think that went in my benefit.
Yeah.
But gee, the fight was hard.
It does sound like a complex process.
It was a nightmare.
That we could look, could look into.
Yes, absolutely. So part of my role within the community engagement team is to raise these things within the agency to the relevant areas. So in terms of the resolution that you might see, that you won't see in the, let's be honest, you won't see in the short term, but happy to give people my email address and to assure you that those things are being raised within our branch to raise within other parts of the agency. That voice of that community mainstream team to resolve the issues or feed them back into the agency, because what I'm hearing is there's a whole bunch of stuff that the agency isn't doing very well. And so
I got my dog at 5, so it's not like I've had her since she was 2, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Leanne again? Is that you, Leanne?
Yeah.
Yep, okay. Please say your name when you come online. That'll be good. That's all right.
Yeah. It's Rowena. Can you hear me?
Yes, Rowena. Yep.
Can I ask a question?
Go for it.
Yep.
Angela, I'm in the position
it's
where
Amber.
Sorry, Amber. Where I had to retire my dog early and have been on the waiting list for a very long time for a replacement dog. And after waiting more than 12 months in the state where I live, I got sick of it and went interstate and got a dog within 3 months. And they're telling me that they have matched me with a dog, but they don't have a trainer available in New South Wales or Queensland where I live to train me. So this dog is ready to go from November, and they're saying it'll be February, March before I can get a trainer to train me. I have private trainers that would train me straight away with the dog, and my funding for training is in my account, and I'm exercising my right to choice and control under the NDAs to say I can employ my own private trainers, and the guide dog schools are saying, no, you can't do that because we're providing the dog and we have to do the follow-up. And we have a duty of care to make sure that you and the dog are okay. What leg do I have to stand on to say, well, you can't provide me with a timely service and support, so I'm going to take the training money elsewhere?
Yeah, so Rowena, that is part of the conversation I've had with our provider team and that I'm seeking answers on in terms of that flexibility to go outside of the organisation that provided the dog. So give me a couple of weeks to really track down the answer to that. And I'll send Kevin our community engagement email address and happy to provide my work phone number as well. But definitely following that up in terms of the ownership, the ability to be flexible to take your funding to someone else. And if you're self-managing that, the thought of the provider team was that shouldn't be an issue, but we really need to get a 100% consistent answer from the agency. So working on that for you all.
Yeah.
Yep. And I'll send the email
Can I have something to say, please?
Sorry?
I want something. Is it safe to talk now or are you still talking to someone else?
No, that's okay. Who's that?
I just want to say something about my problem.
Yep.
I want people to be aware. Now, I have you plan in August and I've been getting train port money for since 2017, my new plan coming up this month in order to say I can't have transport money. And I have a working dog. So I just want everybody to be aware that Planner is cutting back transport money and they won't give me transport money at all for me to take the taxi to those places because I got a seeing eye dog. I can't catch the bus in Brisbane because I don't know where the bus stop is. I can't see the bus number.
and I'm fighting for it now. So just be aware, you planner, the planner is changing the time for.
Right. Any comment, Amber, on that?
Yeah, so what I would say is in terms of reviewing your plan, whoever's developed your plan, or and if you're not comfortable talking to that person, 1-800 number, call in relation to getting your plan reviewed. Because
well, do you know what they're saying? Because we live near the train port, we're not far from the bus stop, you can walk to the bus stop. And I said, I can't take my dog on the hot bitumen, hot cement footpath, and stand in the bus stop. I've tried to fight with the council, state government to put the bus shelter up. I'm not getting anywhere.
Yeah, so within the assessments that you've had around your use of the dog, have they made any recommendations in relation to you needing additional transport support?
Well, to my understanding, I'm fighting for it, and I'm getting somewhere now, I think. I'll wait to get my answer back. But just be mindful of the trouble I'm having with transport money. That's all I'm telling.
This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Yeah, so look, I would
say... are you able to make some comments more generally about transport? Because that's something that we're hearing quite a lot is, if you have a dog, you'll get minimal transport, if any. Transport will be taken out of plans. This seems to be something that we're hearing quite a lot. Could you provide some information about transport funding more generally, please?
Well, yeah. I just thought, I don't know much. Oh, I know that's what my LAC warned me, and she said the new planner's going to cut back, and we got... can't get transport money. I think you have to be joking. Oh, working dog. That's all I know.
But isn't our transport free? We have a card. I don't pay for transport, public transport.
No, no.
I have a... and they wouldn't give me... they only give me 1,000 instead of 1,500 for call money. They won't give me more hours when I ask for it. And they won't give me... night entertainment for 4 hours once a week. They're not everything back, including technology. It's assisting technology on me.
So can I ask, do you feel like you've had a really good explanation around why those things haven't been included?
No answer. This is what I already sent away. God waits to hear back. I put it in your view to say why, because I have heard other people getting equipment. I'm not getting it. And they all got transport money, and I'm not getting it. I don't understand why I've been penalised.
Yeah, so look, I think...
I'm really stressed.
You're stressed. So number one, don't be stressed about it, because it sounds like you have spoken to your local area coordinator. You said you're getting people to start listening to what you're saying. But if you need to ask for a review... So give us the additional evidence around why you need that transport, the additional information around how that relates to the goals in your plan. So just like you're telling me now, dog on the bitumen, I still need to get on the bus. It's back to the conversation around the one-to-one.
The way I live, it's very, very hot up here, 38 degrees, you know.
Yeah.
So I thought, like, all right, then I'll stay home. But I can't go out with my dog, won't work, too hot.
Yeah,
I'm housebound, and I don't know why they knocked me back so many things. Annoying.
Yeah, that's not what we want. As well, too, like through Kevin, I'm happy to get your details and have a look within our system and see if we can't get someone in touch with you or get some...
Well,
to say, hey, this is what this looks like, and give you a better explanation and then provide you with the information to really progress with that review and get us some more information that you can give us.
Well, I think they put me on urgent basis, but I'll wait till I hear back. Could be next year, who knows. But I don't, you know, it's working dog. I mean, I've got to think of my dog. I can't go anywhere. It's got far too hot.
Yeah. What was your name? I missed your name.
Estelle Walker.
Estelle. Okay, yes. Amber, I'll make sure you've got people's contact details, and I'll make sure all of the people on the call here have Amber's contact details at the end of this
week. Yeah, I just want to okay. The reason I brought this up, because I'm fishing hearing MP, I'm deaf as well, and I just want everybody to be aware this is what's happening with the planet. They're trying to cut everything back.
Yep, okay, yep. Estelle, we'll make sure you've got contact. Thank you.
Amber.
Now, sorry, Amber, sorry, to Penny's question, do you know if there's any sort of policy around if you do have a dog guide, then are you restricted in getting other transport support?
No, you shouldn't be. So there's nothing in our practice guide that speaks to that. So transport shouldn't be something that's an either or with a dog. But I'm going to take that back, because if you are all hearing that that is the direction of the agency, that isn't any direction that I've heard, so we'll get some clarification around that. What I would say, though, is it would come back to an individual situation. It would be the conversations that you've had at the planning meeting, and it would be the information that we have at hand to make that decision. So think, when you're in that planning phase of, you know, justifying, which, you know, you've probably, as you've all told me, you've had to do this at every time, justify why you need that additional support. And it doesn't have to be I'm justifying it because, or getting upset about, it just simply needs to be, these are my goals and this is what I need to achieve them within my plan. So transport isn't something that's an either or with a dog.
Okay, thank you.
But I'll come
that's
back
great.
To you all with some more information.
This was my experience.
Thank you.
This is Rosnia.
Yeah.
And my experience in my last plan, I've only just switched over to my new plan, as in yesterday. My old plan, I couldn't get transport because I was told I could use buses, which I can to some extent, yes. But, say, I'm the bushwalker. So I was using a support worker to go bushwalking, but I was in the position where I had to pay their transport to go bushwalking. So I had the funding for a support worker, but I had to pay the transport out of my own pocket because I couldn't get transport allowance. Mm-hmm. And then I'm the same as Estelle, the heat. Once it's hot, it's too hot for the dog to work. And in particular, my first dog, it was a real issue. In once it got to a certain temperature, I just had to catch cabs. And then this plan, I was told cabs were public transport, and therefore I couldn't get transport again. I did get it, and I'm not complaining. I'm very happy with my plan, but I had to really fight for it. And not everyone's capable of doing that. That's a real, to me, that's a real issue, that we have to fight so hard for it.
Not worth it. We shouldn't be fighting for it.
Look, we should be. Yeah, and I will absolutely raise that because, it just turns it into a situation where you've become isolated because of all the things that
That's
you've
right.
described around the heat and the dog and,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. So there is absolutely no direction that I'm aware of from the agency around, you know, dog and transport. Transport should be a consideration within the plan as it relates to your goals in the plan. So if you've got someone sitting next to you that doesn't have a dog and they've had a planning conversation and their goals are to access the community and get themselves to work and they have a transport allowance and you have something similar, that should be something for a delegate to consider.
I don't understand this. I have try and put money into the 2 plan, but for this plan, no. That doesn't make sense.
Did you get an explanation of that?
Amber, it's Esther Watson speaking. I feel like I'm on a... I can't believe what I'm hearing. My dog, Rusty, had to retire at the beginning of midway through the year due to a heart condition. And I went back to NDIS, and I had no problem. They just drew up another plan for me. Cedar cane basically straight out, assessed me, and I'm just waiting for another dog. As for the transport, well, we get public transport. We have a card. I don't understand the issue with public transport.
Yeah,
It's probably just
individual to each person and their location. Yeah. And as well, it comes down to sometimes that really quality conversation that you have with a local area coordinator and a planner. And we want our staff to investigate more and ask more questions and understand, you know, what that means. Make the prediction if you've got a six-year-old dog. So that relies on us to do, but it also relies on you to come in and give us a really good wealth of information in that planning conversation to help us make those good decisions as well.
Well, my planner, she went out of her way. She was just absolutely beautiful. I couldn't speak highly enough of her.
That's great, Esther, and that seems to be what the dependent is, the planner. But Amber, isn't it right that recently now you can support from an agency like Vision Australia or Seeing Eye Dogs or Guide Dog to actually help you in developing your plan prior to your planning meeting? Is now a funded option?
Oh, I haven't heard that.
No.
Okay, so up to you. I haven't heard that. What I would say, though, is if organisations, so take the funding aside, if organisations are supporting you to develop your plan, so say Vision Australia, absolutely take that support. In terms of are we funding that, let me follow that up for you. But if you have an organisation out there that says, we'll develop your NDIS plan and we'll tell you what the NDIS will fund for you and they charge you for it, I'd be very wary of that organisation. So it's unlikely.
I haven't ever been charged for it, but I think there is more. I did hear that there's more support from the agency in recognising that some people do need support to actually navigate that initial conversation and the planning process, so they need support. I actually personally had support from a person from Vision Australia, and it made all the difference for me. So I know these organisations do provide it, and they don't charge us. But
charge me, Kevin. I can tell you that. This is Rose. Vision Australia charged me.
What for?
For support for developing a plan.
Yes, they do. Queensland, they
definitely.
Do.
Hi, guys.
Does it come out of your NDIS plan or out of your pocket?
Yes. No, out of our plan.
And
Well, that's not charging you, Roz. That's the plan. So it's worth people's while to really try and seek some assistance from the agency, because they're specialists in this area. So I think it's a bit of advice that might be handy.
Absolutely. So if people are helping you to develop your plan, take that assistance. There's lots of tools online. There's lots of every organisation has some form of this is how you'd approach the NDIS and plan. And if someone from that organisation, say the therapist who's helping with some functional assessment reports or has worked with you with your O&M training can come to that planning meeting and has capacity to do that or call into that, that is always really, really helpful. So you can have anyone you want at a planning meeting to be that support for you as well.
Yeah.
Hi, Amber. Great. Sorry, this is Fernanda.
Who's talking?
Fernanda from New South Wales.
Okay, Amanda, yep.
Yeah, just overhearing you guys about transport. I recently got funded for my new speeder, my first speeder, and I got transport money as well.
Yep, very good.
Yeah, and I actually went with a support person from Guard Dogs New South Wales, and they didn't charge me at all. They didn't even charge my plan.
Perfect, yeah. Perfect. And that's what should happen. The reason I just want to, let's put it in brackets, that providers charging people for plans, what has happened in the provider market at times, and it hasn't been any vision-related organisation, they've asked people, what they've done is they've developed someone's plan with them, they've charged them a nominal fee, the person has come to the agency and not had those things approved in their plan. So the message is, only the NDIS can write your NDIS plan. Only you can sit with us and develop that plan in terms of the information from you as a participant, and only our delegates can approve that plan. So if there's an organisation saying, we can tell you what your funding amount will be, or we will tell you what will be included in your plan, they can't. They can support you with the conversation and what might happen, but so don't think that if I'm developing my plan with an organisation and they say this is the funding amount, that might not necessarily happen when it comes into the agency. So there are some organisations out there that aren't so ethical in that area, but I would definitely say that the support that I've seen Guide Dogs specifically give to people around planning is 100%. So if you're utilising those people to support you with your plan, get as much information as you can from them, with them, have them call into your planning meeting to help you.
Yeah, but unfortunately now support coordination is not part of Guide Dogs New South Wales. They've actually got rid of everyone with that role.
Oh, have they? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vision so that's once you've got a plan.
Mm. Yeah.
Vision Australia has told me that they're advising everyone with plans to keep 2 hours in their capacity building for the next plan, because that's what they're charging.
Yep. Yeah,
okay.
Got you. Yep.
Okay. Now, anyone that hasn't had a chance to ask a question that have one? No.
No, it's very useful.
No, it's good. Hi, thanks, John.
Can I? Sorry, Kathy.
Kathy, yes.
Yeah. Sorry, Amber. I do have a question about equipment. The equipment that we purchase for our dogs, is that ours, or is it on permanent loan?
It's yours. It's your
equipment. So the harness. All of it is ours.
It's a purchase. Yeah, what are you being told?
That it's on permanent loan.
Let me follow that
and
up.
And they will replace it when necessary. It's on permanent loan for the life of the working dog.
Yeah, because Amber, in this case, they're worried about is a harness. They don't want it to be used on another dog, for example. So they can't just leave it with the person. When the dog retires, they want the equipment back as well to be sure that the harness, et cetera, is not being used on an untrained dog. That's the rationale behind it.
At the same time, it's included in my quote that I'm paying for that harness.
Yes,
so
ownership
is more or less like
it?
A rental. Yeah.
So look, that comes back even to...
Is that not included in the cost of the dog, though, with the quote of the dog itself?
It is included with the quote with the dog. The harness will be listed as a separate item.
And the dog, they're still the king's property, so therefore the harness, etc.
Look, up until it's owned. It comes back to that question of ownership, which I'm chasing, but I'll add that the harness question into that, because
that'd be great.
Yeah, let's clear that up, because there's a range of dot points there that, we need to get you some clarification on, because you're all hearing different things from
probably different organisations. So I'll get you the agency's stance and perspective on that. And just on top of that, if that's not supported necessarily by, say, Guide Dogs Australia, my team is the team within the agency to then go and have those conversations with them and look at how that works within the sector. So it's one of those work in progress things.
Amber, it's Bev. I have a question. You're saying that when your dog is 6 years old and you're saying there's a 12-month waiting period, that doesn't really add up. The numbers don't seem to add up because if your dog is six and you wait, got to have waiting for 12 months, and but on average, I'm on my fifth dog, and average they work till they're 10 or 11 and a half. So can you explain that, please? Does it take 4 years to get a new dog?
No. So it probably takes about 12 months to get a dog. But before we were talking about that people would look to be retiring a dog at around 8 years old in terms of...
That's too young.
So if we're looking at predicting and planning and conversations that you're having every time you have a plan with the agency, we would hope that our staff would be saying, hey Bev, your dog's 6 years old, you know, are they healthy, what's going on, are we looking at retiring? You'd say, no, not a problem, most of my dogs have gone till 10. You'd come in.
This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
The next year we say, dog seven, have you been talking about retiring the dog? So that six year for me is about how the agency should start to be predicting and having conversations with you to work towards, when are we looking to retire the dog? We know that a replacement dog is potentially 12 months away, so that we have that process in chain for people, so we don't have long wait periods. So we don't have someone retiring a dog when it's, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and then not having had those conversations around what's coming and then having a wait period for a dog.
Yes, well, that hasn't happened.
And hopefully it doesn't. So, yeah, hopefully.
No, in the planning meetings they haven't asked about that. You know, ideally you like a transition, a smooth transition from one dog to the other, obviously. And that has happened most of the time, but with the NDIS it's a new ball game because I didn't know you'd have to be preparing for like 4 years in advance.
No, I'm not asking you to prepare 4 years in advance. I'm saying that we would be expecting that a dog would retire after 7 years of age.
No, that's too early, way too early. Because
it depends on the dog.
Yeah, it depends on the dog. If there's no health issues, most of my average have been 10 or 11.
You know, so that's your experience, but what we would look at is the lifetime of a piece of equipment would be around that 7 to 8 year mark.
Both my last two dogs retired at 7, so it can happen.
That's right. Hang on, just can we finish off on this point? So really what Amber's saying is from the age of 6 or 7, whatever it is, it's just in your next planning meeting, just checking in, saying how the dog is. Fine, you go on the next one. Just so that, say, at age 9, you say, okay, I don't think my dog's going to be able to go on after next year. And then you can have a conversation and actually then maybe get on the list of a dog guide agency. And so the transition is smooth. So all that Amber's saying is that once it's starting to get older, is just to be aware that you should just touch base with your planner about how your dog's going so that as early as possible you can anticipate when a change might need to occur.
I think that should be told to the planners then, because that never happened. And my dog was 6 the last planning meeting.
Very confusing.
And, you know, now I've got a 2-year plan, so how do you, How do you...
Bev, we should be proactive as well in terms of our dogs, because we know them best.
I've never heard, but certainly
Amber will probably feed that back to her crew. That's a question that they could ask when a dog gets a certain age.
So Bev, in your planning meeting, were you asked how the dog was going?
No, we just had all the they were aware that, you know, consumables and all of that kind of stuff. No, I don't think anything was asked about the...
That would be pretty cool. I'd be asking how the dog was going. but, again, tell us how your dog's going. You know, my dog's this age. And if you've got a two-year plan, that's fine as well, because any changes, just get in touch with the agency and let them know what's going on for your planner in that case, rather than the agency.
Okay.
It's Penny here. I've just got one quick little thing to add to that. So I've got a bit of a cat to throw amongst the pigeons. Is there any thought about funding our dogs per year rather than giving these agencies a lump sum amount? Because, you know, sometimes our dogs may not work out for the whole lifetime of the dog. And I think there's quite a few questions that we have about what happens if a dog retires after 6 months, 8 months, 1 year, 2 years, you know, and, is there thought about funding the dogs differently rather than this huge lump sum amount that you're currently paying to organisations when they're living, breathing animals that are not like a piece of technology where you can predict the longevity, I think.
Yeah, so if dogs are retiring earlier than 7 years of age, we'd be really looking at getting information on why that is, and that could be a range of reasons, but I haven't heard anything around funding per year. Absolutely, I will throw that cat amongst the provider and markets team pigeons and ask them if that is a consideration for the agency, because it doesn't seem to be... it's not a bad idea necessarily.
The agencies will hate me for even suggesting it, but, you know, from a person point of view, it makes a lot more sense.
And I don't think there's absolutely no issue with you saying that, because the only way that the processes of the NDIS change is for groups like yourself to say, hey, this is not working for us, this is how we need it, have it fed back and have those conversations happen for that change to eventuate. So who knows what would eventuate, but absolutely, any cats you've got to throw amongst the pigeons, go for it, because that's what creates change within the NDIS. And we still need to remember that the NDIS is so new in the scheme of what it's trying to achieve within the country, and even the stage it's at with rollout, that Western Australia has only just started to roll out. So it's a little while before every single person is in the scheme, and everyone in the agency is working hard to refine everything we need. But it's all you guys that have to, you know, tell me, hey, this isn't working, and me to go and do my job to start those things being heard. And through any advocacy agencies, any peak bodies that you have contact with, even with your people at Guide Dogs Australia and Vision Australia, they feed that all back into the agency, hopefully to make the scheme evolve and be better for all people who need the support. So, and that's you guys.
Right. Thank you, Amber. Any last questions before we wrap up?
Hi, Amber. This is Tracy. I just want to ask a quick question. I just got my new plan, and it didn't, because last year all my ongoing expenses being charged to assistive technology, but for this year, just now you mentioned that the ongoing maintenance expense need to charge to consumable. So is it including the dog insurance I also charge to consumable category. I believe so. That would be in your consumables budget, your food, your vet, your insurance. Because this year they're taking away. Not putting under the assistive technology. So I got a little bit confused. But thank you. So I will just those expenses being charged to consumable.
That's correct.
Okay, good. Thank you, Amber.
Thank you. Okay, well, look, I think we best wind up. Amber's been very generous with her evening tonight. And I want to thank John Hardy. John set this up, made contact with Amber, as he did with our previous member teleconference. John, you haven't had any questions. You're quite, you okay there? You've got no issues to raise?
No, I think it's been extremely informative and useful, and certainly I'm extremely grateful to Amber for the provision of her evening to be helpful. I couldn't help reflecting just before when we were talking about the lifespan of a dog. I unfortunately had a seeing eye dog that was only a couple of years old when it went through. Well, I don't know whether it was sort of some sort of mental breakdown or whatever, but its whole behaviour changed. And so whilst we hope that we get long and a very fruitful and healthy life out of our dog, I think it's important that this was pre-NDIS times, that that we remember that there can be strange and fairly stressful and unpleasant things that can occur. And particularly if you're having to go in and produce evidence and do things when you're under a great deal of pressure emotionally, in any case, it can be quite trying. So Amber's assistance with that is greatly appreciated.
Yeah. Great. All right. Well, so I'll ensure that you all get Amber's contact details, and similarly, Amber, I will share our contact details with you. And just want to thank you very much. This is a really good start. I think, as you've indicated, it will be an ongoing discussion because the NDIS is such a new scheme, and as you say, consumer feedback is all important to refining the program. We also do hold a DGHA national conference every 2 years, Amber, and that's going to fall next year in 2020. So I'll keep you informed about that, because certainly one of the key areas we'll discuss at our conference is the NDIA and dog guides. So just for your interest, but also we really do welcome NDIA people to join us at those conferences too. So I'll keep you up to date with that.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much, everyone. And for when you get my details, we'll start to work through some of those things that were raised.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website, www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?